Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 12th. We will talk about politics and public health this hour, following up on comments this week before Congress by former Surgeon General Richard Carmona, who told a committee looking into strengthening the office of the U.S. Surgeon General that he faced interference from top Bush administration officials who didn't want him speaking out on certain public health issues. He says he was repeatedly told to keep quiet or to not issue reports on issues like stem cells, emergency contraception, prison, mental, and global health issues, all for political reasons. He says he was even discouraged from attending the Special Olympics because the Kennedy family was tied to that organization. Is the Bush administration putting politics ahead of public health? Is the Office of the Surgeon General able to advocate for public health, or does the political ideology of the administration in power take precedence? And what about the new nominee to be the next Surgeon General? His confirmation hearings begin today, and his nomination is being criticized by some gay rights groups and other health groups because they say that he has put his political and religious ideology before established medical science. So we're going to talk about all this hour, and we are welcoming your questions as we talk about politics and public health. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Do you think political considerations trump public health needs today? Do you have any thoughts on the Surgeon General nominee? We will welcome your thoughts and views for our guest, David Ozanoff, Chairman Emeritus of Environmental Health at Boston University's School of Public Health. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, were you surprised at all by Dr. Carmona's testimony this week?
Well, I was surprised and not surprised. I was surprised to hear from him at all because in his 4 years as Surgeon General, he was virtually the invisible Surgeon General. So, even though he's no longer the Surgeon General, it was nice to hear from him.
Well, he was invisible, do you think, because he was told to be invisible?
No, clearly. And visibility, in fact, is his only function. That was the odd thing about his term as Surgeon General. I was in the habit during those years of going around our School of Public Health, which is all composed of students and professionals in public health, and asking them who the Surgeon General of the United States was. And usually less than 1 in 10 people could give me the name of the current Surgeon General of the United States at that time, which was Dr. Carmona. On the other hand, almost everybody could name a Surgeon General of the United States. It's not as if it's an obscure post. When C. Everett Koop was Surgeon General, people knew his name, and many of the subsequent Surgeon Generals were extremely well known, too. And I think this was a function of his role in the current administration, which was essentially to be invisible. The current administration has not made science or public health priorities in their administration, and they were not particularly interested in what science might tell them about policy matters. And so Dr. Carmona was unfortunately, I think, quite compliant in that regard and wasn't heard from.
Yeah, we did hear from C. Everett Koop and some others at the congressional hearing this week, but it was different for them, you think?
Well, they say that they were subject to the same kinds of political influences, and public health is a political discipline within the science of medicine and public health. Public health has the word public in it, and that's because it deals with policies of what we have chosen to do for each other and how we've chosen to help each other, which is what public health is all about. So political matters are inevitable, and in 1968, when the Public Health Service was reorganized, it was reorganized in a way to make it more susceptible to the influence of elected officials. It was felt at that time that that was something that was desirable. That was at the point when the Surgeon General of the United States Public Health Service, which up to that point had been head of the Public Health Service, essentially had become demoted to the position of being a spokesperson and educator. And essentially they have very little staff and very little budget. And since 1968, they have been in an almost titular position whose only role was to provide advocacy for public health and the science of public health to the American public. Some of them have done it extraordinarily well, and Koop was an example of a very good Surgeon General, and some of them have not done it so well.
Yeah.
And I think Dr. Carmona, unfortunately, is an example of that. He is speaking out now, but it's, in the views of many of us, somewhat late to the party.
Well, Dr. Koop said at this hearing that he was discouraged from discussing the AIDS crisis during the Reagan administration, but he did it anyway. And President Reagan backed him up when other top officials complained about it.
Yes, and I think that's the point, that if you are going to occupy the role of an educator and somebody who is the sort of the moral voice of public health, moral in the sense of upholding the standards of public health science and public health, then you have to have the courage of your convictions. And Dr. Koop did. Dr. Koop is very interesting. He was a very, very conservative physician. And when he was appointed to the Surgeon General of Public Health Service, there was a lot of misgivings because he had established or expressed opinions on things like women's reproductive health, for example, which were very disquieting to many people in public health. When he became the Surgeon General of the Public Health Service, though, he played it straight down the line. And as a sort of an educator, somebody whose only weapon was the bully pulpit, he picked certain topics that were important to him and important to public health, and smoking was one of his topics. And he was extremely good at it, and he was out front, and he had courage, and he was a good Surgeon General because he did the one thing that Surgeon Generals could do, in fact, the only thing they could do.
I need to jump in. We need to check weather, and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 and a half minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 12th. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 o'clock, Ben's guest says the Internet is destroying our cultural standards and moral values. Well, that's after 5 this afternoon. We are talking about politics and public health, the office of the U.S. Surgeon General, and what the outgoing Surgeon General, Dr. Carmona, had to say before Congress this week. He claims that the Bush administration suppressed certain health reports and told him to stay silent on important public health issues, said that top Bush administration officials put political considerations ahead of the public health of this nation. We're welcoming your reactions to that, your questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We'll also talk some with our guest about the current and controversial nominee for Surgeon General, Dr. James Holsinger. His confirmation hearings start today, and we will talk a little bit about whether or not he is going to be confirmed. 1-800-642-1234 or 263-1890, the number you can use to join in. Our guest, Dr. David Ozenoff, is Chairman Emeritus and Professor of Environmental Health at Boston University's School of Public Health. And our first caller is Matt in Warrens. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing, Joy?
Very good.
I have a question and observation, then I'll take my answer off the air. I agree with the doctor. I think that history largely is the judge of the performance of Surgeon Generals in his observations on Dr. Koop. My question for him is, in the middle of an administration, regardless if it's Republican or Democrat, Isn't there criticism like this all the time that kind of falls along partisan lines? It is kind of discerning to me to hear that some information was suppressed, you know, when it comes to public health information. I think it's very important that it almost be a nonpartisan position so that the public can be protected. That's my question for him to answer. My observation is, just along the lines of the show in the last hour, the question here, you know, would largely point me to the direction that public radio kind of leans along those.
Yeah, Matt, I'm sorry you didn't be, you weren't able to call during the last hour, but we don't want to divert our attention to what we talked about last hour. We want to talk about this issue this hour. Dr. Ozanoff?
Well, it's an interesting question, is that how much politics should be part of the discussion of the operation of the Office of Surgeon General of the United States? There's two kinds of politics. There's sort of politics writ large, which are important policy issues and decisions about where we should go, and then there's partisan politics. They are intertwined, of course. You can't completely separate them. But sometimes the mix is more of one and more of the other. And in this administration, it's tended to be more partisan politics than policy issues. It is true, however, that those policy issues have been part of the discussion with other surgeon generals, where they have come under pressure not to discuss certain topics that were hot-button issues or sensitive issues, like AIDS or sexually transmitted diseases in general, or substance abuse. And the good ones, like Dr. Koop, have done what they thought was the right thing to do, and by and large have not been targets of partisan attacks. Some of them have done what they thought was the right thing to do, and were not as skillful at it as Dr. Koop was. Dr. Elders is an example who got involved in a discussion of sex education and essentially lost her position as a result of it. Part of this has to do with the skill of the chief educator of the United States on public health matters, the Surgeon General, and Dr. Koop was good at it, and Dr. Elders was not quite so good at it.
Yeah. There were some reactions from White House spokespeople or spokespeople from the Department of Health and Human Services who said that they disagreed with Dr. Carmona's statements before Congress, saying it has always been this administration's position that public health policy should be rooted in sound science. Another saying that it is disappointing to us that Dr. Carmona failed to use this position to the fullest extent in advocating for policies he thought were in the best interests of the nation. You want to react to the White House reaction?
Well, I mean, that's clearly a lie. I don't think there's any other way to put it. And I don't think anybody should be surprised that this White House was trying to influence the information that came out of the executive branch, which the Public Health Service is part of. They've been doing that right along. Science is just not on the radar screen. Policy and their policy issues are on the radar screen. And if science interferes with it, then science disappears. It's not a credible statement by the White House. I could say it's false, but the truth is it's a lie. It's not, you know, that's the straightforward way to put it. And I say that in a nonpartisan way, if that's possible when criticizing a current administration. I would have said it with a Clinton administration if they had made statements like that or any other administration. It just isn't true.
Our next caller is Tom in Wausau. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is, don't you think this administration kind of does that with all its people, not just the Surgeon General? If they don't want what he's saying out front, they kind of push him to the back and get rid of him anyhow. That's kind of the way it looks to me. Like, take Governor Thompson, for instance. All of a sudden, he was done in 4 years. He had some good plans going in, but then all of a sudden, bang, he's gone, you know. That's kind of the way I'm looking at it. And maybe I'll take my answer off there.
Right. So political considerations affect all of the agencies, not just the Surgeon General?
Well, I think that's true. Tight control of information, it is, I would say, both a tactic and a strategy of this and a number of other administrations, including in many states. Having tight control over reports that come out, things that are said, travel schedules, are a classic technique for controlling information flow. And I think this administration has been very well known for the degree to which it's held on to information. And I think the caller is correct about another thing, which is it's not specific to public health. Public health is just another example of it.
Yeah. Annette in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. This isn't directly related to the Surgeon General, but I heard a few years back when Tommy Thompson was head of the health department that he selectively chose or replaced all independent scientific panels and judges and whatnot, again, akin to what the previous caller said to bias scientific reports and to, tone down things. And is that true? Do you know if that was true?
Yes, it is true. And there have been numerous reports, starting early on in the Bush administration first term, about interference in scientific advisory committees. I think it's generally acknowledged that this is a fact. Some of the agencies have had to issue public statements saying that they are going to reform their procedures. I've been on many federal scientific advisory committees, and I've seen over the years, I've been doing this for almost four decades now, that this administration was quite different than other administrations, not just Democratic administrations, but other Republican administrations in that regard. It was highly unusual, and they did interfere at the most fundamental level in staffing with outside experts, scientific advisory committees, which then became less advisory and more justification committees.
Yeah, let's get a brief preview from you. We'll talk more in our next half hour. We have a news break coming up in just about a minute. What are your thoughts on Dr. James Halsinger, who is the nominee to be the next Surgeon General?
I think it's very difficult to know what a Surgeon General is going to be like, and Dr. Cooper is a good example. Many had misgivings about him. He was a terrific Surgeon General, and many of us have had misgivings since he stopped being Surgeon General. But while he was Surgeon General, he was good, and we can hope for the same for Dr. Halsinger. He comes with a significant amount of baggage as somebody who needs to exercise some suasion. And
yeah.
Some moral stature.
Well, we'll talk about that baggage coming up after we check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll continue taking your calls for our guest about politics and public health and the controversy over the Surgeon General's role. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Thursday morning, July the 12th. The former Surgeon General, Richard Carmona, told a congressional panel on Tuesday that top Bush administration officials would not let him talk about stem cells, emergency contraception, sex education, and other public health issues because of political considerations. Dr. Carmona testified under oath at a hearing before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, which is looking into the office of the Surgeon General, and wondering whether the office should be strengthened. Other past Surgeon Generals also testified at the hearing, and each complained some about political interference. But Dr. Carmona says he faced more political interference than they had. We're talking about politics and public health, based on Dr. Carmona's charges this week, and the confirmation hearings that begin today on the new controversial nominee to be the next Surgeon General. Dr. James Holsinger faces confirmation hearings today, and opposition by a number of health groups and gay rights groups. He apparently has written in the past about his views on homosexuality, and these groups say that he puts his political and religious ideology before established medical science. So we're talking about politics and public health and welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Before we talk more with our guest about the new nominee for Surgeon General, our guest is Dr. David Ozanoff, Chairman Emeritus and Professor of Environmental Health at Boston University School of Public Health. Let me take our next caller who's been waiting through the news. Bruce in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks very much. I wanted to talk about the role of the civil servant. The civil servants in the Bush administration, and particularly in Tommy Thompson's Department of Health and Human Services. My understanding is that it's important to have an impartial civil service which provides politic-free policy recommendations. And in the case of Medicare Modernization Act and the running of the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, what you had was the interference of politicians, and some of them who took good jobs with commerce after they retired. But what you had was the interference with the workings of the civil service. Do you have any line on how effective Dr. Carmona was as director of the Uniformed Public Health Service?
Well, he was really not the director of the Uniformed Public Health Service. Historically, the Surgeon General has been the director of the Uniformed Public Health Service, but after the reorganization of 1968, the Public Health Service was first directed by an undersecretary for health in the Department of HEW, and now is the secretary of HHS is really the head of the Uniformed Public Health Service. The Surgeon General is just a spokesperson and an educator. He or she has very little staff, very little budget, and really directs nobody but themselves. And it turns out in this administration doesn't even direct themselves. The question of civil servants, I think, is a very important question. And one of the bad things that's happened, not just in this administration, but in the previous administration, and in going back to the Reagan administration, has been a denigration of public service as an honorable thing to do. In my estimation, and I work for a private university, I'm not a civil servant, being a civil servant is one of the most honorable things that you can do. And the fact that politicians have been running for office on the basis of denigrating what people who serve us do has, I think, had a terrible effect on it, on those people. And is one of the tragedies of the last 20 or 30 years, and it's both political parties have been guilty of this. Under this administration, it's reached new heights, and I'm trying not to be partisan about this because I don't think this is a Republican and Democratic issue. This administration, whether it's Republican or Democrat, it happens to be a Republican one, is qualitatively different than the others, and has done things that nobody would have imagined in previous administrations. And I think that's the significance of what's going on with the Surgeon General here. It's a symbol or a symptom of a serious disease.
Mm. Can you give us an example of something the administration did specifically in the area of public health that that is outrageous?
Well, there are so many little examples. Mm. And all the little examples add up to one big example, which is a public health as a priority, essentially, has moved off the radar screen. It's part of the vision of a world in which government is so small that it's impotent, except in those areas, of course, where they want it to be powerful. And public health is not one of those areas. And I think it's been across the board a innovation, taking the tools away from scientific professionals. And one sees it in many agencies. There's another agency within the Public Health Service, the Centers for Disease Control, which is at the lowest ebb in morale that I have ever seen it in my 40 years in medicine and public health. They've lost their institutional memory as the scientific professionals have headed for the exit doors. They're crushing each other at the exit doors to get out. It is now an agency which has lost its way. And it's not the only one. One sees it in other agencies as well. The Food and Drug Administration is part of the Public Health Service. Many people don't know that.
Yeah.
NIH is part of the Public Health Service.
Yeah, the FDA got into all sorts of hot water. There was some news about they had all this advice to approve the over-the-counter sale of the emergency contraceptive pills, but kept on delaying that decision and not doing it, and everybody said it was because of political considerations.
Yes, it's a notorious example. In fact, I know a number of the principals involved in this, and one of them who made, I think, a very wrong decision for the FDA is an acquaintance and a friend of mine, and I was astonished to see how he is acting within this administration, because he wasn't that way before. The FDA and the morning after pill example is a clear example of how scientific professionals within the agency were overruled because for policy reasons, the Bush administration did not want over-the-counter sales of the morning after pill.
Andrew in San Antonio, Texas is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
I've got a question for you guys. Doesn't the Hippocratic Oath in and of itself negate political influence when you become a doctor?
Oh, you know, oaths like the Hippocratic Oath can be interpreted in so many different ways. I wouldn't say that that any kind of political position, almost, except, well, there are some things a doctor can do which would be a clear violation of the Hippocratic Oath, but in these policy matters, I wouldn't task somebody for violating their oath, I must say.
Yeah, Andrew, so what's your point that, Dr. Carmona should have spoke out, or...
Well, absolutely. I mean, as somebody who's in charge of the welfare of the nation, at least the awareness of the welfare of the nation in the public spectrum, should definitely have the gusto to stand up and speak out, especially when asked not to.
Yeah, even if it means you're going to get canned, Dr. Ozanoff.
Well, I don't think that it's a question of the Hippocratic Oath, but I think it is a question of character.
Yeah, and you think, do you think he should have spoke out anyway?
Yes, absolutely. I do think so. Or he could have acted as Dr. Koop did, which is he's been told he's not to talk about something, but he did it anyway because he thought it was the right thing to do. Now, in this administration, unlike in the Reagan administration, that would have probably resulted in the loss of his job. But let's face it, Dr. Carmona is a trauma surgeon. He's not going to be living in a Kelvinator refrigerator box out on the street.
Yeah, he's got some other things he can do. Our guest is Dr. David Ozanoff, Chairman Emeritus and Professor of Environmental Health at Boston University School of Public Health, talking with us about the comments of former Surgeon General Dr. Richard Carmona, who claimed that the Bush administration is suppressing public health information, telling him not to issue or told him not to issue health reports, told him to stay silent on public health issues. We wonder if this concerns you or not. We also wonder if you have any thoughts or questions about the new nominee to be Surgeon General, which we'll talk a little bit more about after this weather break. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, a larger population can make everyone richer, a stingy neighbor is often the best kind, and more sex is safer sex. These statements may seem irrational, but according to our guest, they make perfect sense. He'll explain the unconventional wisdom in economics coming up after 8 o'clock. We're talking about politics and public health this hour. President Bush's most recent Surgeon General is accusing the administration of muzzling him for political reasons. Dr. Richard Carmona told a House panel this week that there was interference on such hot-button health issues such as emergency contraception and abstinence-only education. Dr. Carmona told lawmakers that all surgeon generals have had to deal with politics, but none more so than he. Responding, the White House said Carmona was given the authority and had the obligation to be the leading voice for the health of all Americans. Confirmation hearings are scheduled to start today for Dr. James Holsinger Jr., a Kentucky cardiologist who was nominated by President Bush to be the nation's 18th Surgeon General. The nomination has been criticized by a number of groups, including gay rights groups, because of his views, Dr. Holsinger's views on homosexuality. What can you tell us about Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Ozenoff?
Well, I don't know that much about him beyond, his public statements. He was a medical director of the VA system in the early 90s. At a time when the VA system was criticized for substandard care in their hospitals, but that could be almost any time. But in particular, he was really forced to take responsibility for some negligence issues in some VA hospitals, I think in Seattle and Chicago were the two that I remember. So as an administrator of medical systems, he doesn't have an unblemished record. He has made statements about his personal views on homosexuality. These are views, I think, which run counter to most people in public health, and they're certainly not scientifically based, but I would say that people are entitled to their personal opinions.
Yeah, and for instance, he thinks that homosexual sex is unnatural, and
yes.
You can hold that kind of belief and still be an effective Surgeon General?
Well, it depends on how much you allow it to interfere with your scientific judgment.
Mm-hmm.
For example, on your judgments and your statements and your leadership on questions of established and prudent public health policy with respect to sex education, for example, and many other things that may border on that. Dr. Koop was a person of very specific religious views. I think he came from either a Mennonite or some Dutch Pennsylvania Dutch religious mm-hmm. background. But when he was Surgeon General, he never let those things color his treatment of the science of public health. He used the bully pulpit of the Surgeon General's position, I think, in the proper way. Whether Dr. Holsinger will be able to do that at the age of 70, we'll have to see.
Yeah.
If he is confirmed, and I think he's got a little bit of a rough road ahead of him in the confirmation hearings, then we'll hope for the best.
Yeah, it says, I have here that the American Public Health Association, made up of 50,000 U.S. public health professionals, issued a statement yesterday coming out in opposition to the nomination. It says it was the second time ever and the first time in 26 years that this group has opposed a U.S. Surgeon General nominee, saying that his views of homosexuality and his political and religious ideology trump established medical science. So that's why they oppose.
Right. The American Public Health Association essentially is the public health counterpart to the American Medical Association. So its views, I think, are a stark statement on what the public health profession thinks of Dr. Holsinger's views from the public health scientific point of view. Now, again, to the extent to which he makes those personal views relevant to what he does, we'll just have to see, and it may be that he won't be confirmed because there's substantial opposition.
Yeah. We have an open line for you and time for you if you want to get in on this discussion about the new Surgeon General nominee and the controversy over his confirmation, which begins today, or on the former Surgeon General's charges this week that the Bush administration puts politics before public health. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. And our next caller is Patricia in Milwaukee. Hi, Patricia. You're on the air.
Hello. The one thing that concerned me, essentially, was
the statement that the Surgeon General was ordered to mention the Bush administration in positive light at least three times on every page of his speeches. And so I think it sounds to me like anyone with integrity, he mentioned, your guest mentioned earlier about people leaving the agencies, anyone with integrity who was ordered to do that, I don't think would last very long. So that troubles me and makes me realize, again, any information that comes out of agencies from this administration is skewed to be written in the way they have ordered it.
Reaction, Dr. Ozenoff?
I don't think I disagree with that statement. And it has to do with control of information, which is what this administration is about in so many areas, not just in public health.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you know whether or not any Surgeon General nominee has been rejected in a confirmation hearing. I don't have any information on that.
When you mentioned that, I actually couldn't think of any. Mm-hmm. And so 26 years ago was 1981.
I'll ask my producer to make a check to see if we have any information on that. But do you think that you said he has a rough row to hoe ahead of him? You think it's possible that he might be rejected in this confirmation hearing?
It is. Well, I mean, it's no secret that we have an extremely partisan and polarized environment in Congress, and how that's going to play out, I think, is nobody knows. I think it's surprising that the Bush administration would want to pick a fight here. There are many safe candidates they could have picked for a position which is not a cardinal position in any administration, especially an administration that doesn't value public health very much. So picking Dr. Holsinger seemed like a symbolic act, sort of an in-your-face act to the public health community. Although I guess that's also been sort of a hallmark of this administration.
Yeah. So what do you recommend, Dr. Ozenoff, in separating this office of Surgeon General from the politics of any given administration?
Well, what the best way to do that is to pick good Surgeon Generals. I don't know that there's a structural way to do it. This is, again, not a very independent position because it has no staff, it has no budget worth speaking of. One might wonder whether we need a Surgeon General of the United States given that. But a good Surgeon General can make it play an important role. A Surgeon General that is invisible might as well not be there, but on the other hand, they're not costing very much either. Mm-hmm. I don't think they do a lot of damage, although we'll see. Perhaps this one will do a lot of damage. But they could do so much more good if they're good people, good professionals who do what's right and lead in public health.
Yeah, would in our final couple of minutes, do we need a Surgeon General?
I think that's an open question, especially in the last 6 years. Nobody could even name who the Surgeon General of the United States was. Were we worse off for not knowing who the Surgeon General was? I don't know. I think we were better off when everybody knew who the Surgeon General was during the coup era. Dr. Satcher, who did not have the same kind of strong public persona as Dr. Coop, still did some very good things with reports that he released on important topics like suicide. So the Surgeon General can do some things that wind up being important. And in fact, Dr. Carmona, virtually the last thing he did was release an important report on secondhand smoke. And many people think that that's why his appointment was not renewed, because that was a long-delayed report that didn't please the Bush administration.
Yeah, he said he was told to tone that down, too. But, well, we'll leave it there. We're out of time. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Dr. David Ozenoff, Chairman Emeritus and Professor of Environmental Health at Boston University's School of Public Health. We appreciate his time and his insights into politics and public health. Thanks to Karen Prager, who produced the hour. Thanks to Christina Taylor for on-air production. And thank you for listening and for calling in. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, you can call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444, 1-800-747-7444. Or if you'd like to listen to our talk shows through your computer, they're archived on our website for listening at your convenience, WPR.org, WPR.org. Tomorrow morning on the Ideas Network, a couple of interesting, I think, programs for you. It Happened in Wisconsin, a new book about the sometimes weird and wonderful things that have happened right here in Wisconsin. That's in our 6 o'clock hour tomorrow morning. And then in our 7 o'clock hour tomorrow morning, bottled water and why there's a backlash against bottled water. We'll talk with a critic of bottled water tomorrow morning after 7. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.